So we are holding the last words of Bays on the Bays. We're in the middle of the discussion. The Mishnah had started Urlau Bar also Birdkin as a Hametz on the Ur of the 14th of Nisan. We check for Hametz, and the question was, what does Ur mean? We had Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda arguing, or at least seemingly arguing, whether Ur means the night before, or whether it means Rav Huna had said it means Naghi, which means light. So on the face of it, it means when the light is beginning to come in the sky, meaning Alois HaShachar of the 14th. And Rav Yehuda had said Leili that it means the night. Literally the night. So the Gemara has been going through a bunch of attempted proofs one way or the other, whether we can demonstrate to demonstrate that the word Ur means night or that it means day. Some of them we said, okay, it does prove that it means night, but still the Gemara is continuing on with it. For one thing, we said yesterday, the Maharam Chalava says that the various questions, that the various possible proofs that the Gemara is bringing over here may have been brought up originally in different Bate Medrash, and then Ravina and Ravashi collected them all together into the Gemara as we have it. So even though the Gemara has found already some proofs, still it wants to continue. Also, we could say, I mean, you know, okay, so you find some places where the word Ur means night. That doesn't necessarily demonstrate that every time it has to, so the Gemara is still continuing with the discussion. So the Gemara says, Mesvi Marzutra, Mosiv, really, it's supposed to be. Marzutra pointed out a contradiction to Rav Huna, who says that it means daytime. We're going to show from the following Mishnah that the word Ur means night. Now, we're going to be talking about a case where a woman gives birth and miscarries. The Torah tells us that when a woman gives birth, she's tamei for 7 days after a boy and 14 days after a girl. After that, then, there's a period of 33 days for a boy, 66 for a girl, which is called dam toihar, where even if she's still continuing to bleed during that time, she's still tahor and she's still mutter to her husband. She's not tahor as far as eating kodshim, that she has to wait until she brings her korban after 40 days after the birth for a boy or 80 days after the birth for a girl. Now, what happens? The Gemara Rashi brings from the Gemara in Krisus that explains that you have now the pasuk mentions about the korban. It says Zois Toras Hayeledes. This is the rule for the Yeledes, for the woman who gives birth. So the word Toras Hayeledes, the Torah of the woman who gives birth, implies that you have, so to speak, one Torah for many cases where many times that she gives birth, meaning that you can have two or more births that are covered by the same korban. On the other hand, you have the word zeis, which is a miut, which tells us that there are cases where one korban does not cover multiple births. So the key difference is, when did the second birth take place? Now, we have to be talking about where she had, so we have to be talking, for our purposes, we're davka talking about that she had a girl first, because if she had a boy first, since you only have 33 days of Tara, then there's not enough time for a baby to be formed to the point where it's going to be considered a fetus, where it's going to be considered a baby in halacha. You need at least 40 days for that, and you only have 33 days of Tara before she has to bring her korban. So it only works with a girl where there's 66 days of Tara to work with. So you can have then, she has the girl, 2 weeks she's tamei and also to her husband. Then at that point begins her 66 Yemei Tara. She's allowed to have relations with her husband. Nowadays, by the way, we don't do that. If she bleeds during that time, we still consider as if she was a Nida, but the original din of the Torah and in the Gemara, the Rambam writes in his times, there were still some places that did this. Then they still have, there's the din of Dam Toihar. Anyway, so during those 66 days, conceivably then, sorry for the pun, she could be with her husband, conceive another baby, and then miscarry all within those 66 days of Tara, which is a total of 80 days since the original girl was born. So now the din is, if she has that miscarriage during those 80 days, then one korban will cover both of them. On the other hand, if she has the miscarriage after the 80th day, from the 81st day and on, which is when she could have brought her korban, then we say, no, that's when we have the miut zois, that no, then she has to bring a separate korban for the original baby girl that she had, as well as for this miscarriage. So now the question is, the Gemara brings from Mishnah, Hamapelas Ur L'shmonim Ve'echad. If a woman miscarries on the night going into the 81st day, so the 80 days have passed, the next morning she's supposed to bring her korbanos, that night, sometime during that night, she miscarried. Now, on the one hand, it's after the 80 days. On the other hand, it's not time to bring the korban yet, because you can only bring korbanos by day. So, Beshamai Potrin Mikorban, Beshamai says that she'll be potter from a second korban, We started at the very bottom of Bays on the Bays. We're now at the top of Gimel Lamed Aleph. So Beis Shammai poitrin mi korban. Beis Shammai says that she'll be potter from a second korban. She only needs to bring one korban, and that'll cover the girl that she had originally, as well as this miscarried baby now. Or Beis Hillel mechayven. Beis Hillel is going to say that she's chayev in two separate korbanos. So the Mishnah continues. Omer lahan Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. So Beis Hillel argues to Beis Shammai, "My shna or shmoinim ve'echad miyom shmoinim ve'echad. Why should the night before the 81st be different than the day of the 81st? After all, I mean, you Beis Shammai also agree that if the miscarriage happened on the 81st day during the daytime or any time after that, that she's going to bring a separate korban." So it should be also the same thing the night going into the 81st day. After all, usually in halacha, the night and the day are considered the same thing. And they continue, im shiva lo l'truma lo yishva lo l'korban. After all, the night and the day are similar as far as truma. So shouldn't they be similar as far as the korban? Meaning, so like this, any bleeding that she experiences during the 80 days, during the 66 days, whatever the remainder of the 80 days, is dam tohar, and she's still mutter to her husband. But what happens if she has more uterine bleeding after shkia of the 80th day? Going into the 81st day, she's going to be tamei like any regular nida. So, in other words, so you see there, Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai that the night is exactly the same as far as tumah, the same tumah that she would have if she started bleeding on the morning of the 81st. The same tumah also exists the night going into the 81st. So, lo yishva lo l'korban, shouldn't it be the same thing as far as the korban? Just as if she were to miscarry on the morning of the 81st, she would have to bring a separate korban for that. And even you, Beis Shammai, agree. The same thing should be if it was the night going into the 81st. So Rashi brings from the Gemara in Chrysos, where Beis Shammai answers that the difference is that if it's in the morning of the 80th, it's true. Usually we say the night and the day are the same, but after all, you can't bring korbanos at night. So therefore, the night going into the 81st day is not a valid time to bring the korban yet. Therefore, you can say until you reach the time when she can bring the korban, namely the morning of the 81st, then up until that point, it's still covered by the same korban. What about this that you, Beis Hillel, are saying as far as the matter of where she bleeds on the night going after the 80th, going into the 81st, and she's tamei? True, but so what? Beis Shammai says the same thing would happen if, let's say, she had a miscarriage squarely within the 80 days, sometime well before the 80th day. Nevertheless, we say that it's a time of dam tohar, sure, but the blood that accompanies the birth, as it usually does, she's going to be tamei from that. And yet you see that if it's during the 80 days, she's still potter from a korban. So therefore, Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, whether she's tomei or not has nothing to do with whether she's chayev in a second korban or not. Okay, so that's the discussion. Anyway, the point, and in fact, Tosfos points out that, in fact, based on what Beis Shammai answered, Beis Hillel took back what they said, and they said, we still hold our din, but not based on the logic about the night and the day, but rather based on a drasha from a pasuk. Anyway, the point is, mid ka'amri Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, given that we see Beis Hillel is saying to Beis Shammai, Maishna ur shmoinim ve'echad miyoyim shmoinim ve'echad, they're saying, why should there be a difference between the ur of the 81st and the day of the 81st? Shmamina ur tohu. So you clearly see over there, the word ur has to mean the evening. Otherwise, what are they saying? Why would Alois HaShachar of the 81st be different than the day of the 81st? There's Alois HaShachar is already the beginning of the day. So that's another example where we see where the word ur clearly means night, like Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah, not like Rav Huna says that it should mean naghi, which means alois hashachar. Okay, the Gemara says you're right. Shmamina, good. This is another proof that the word ur means night. We had a couple of them before on Beis Amud Beis. Now we have another one where clearly we have a case where the word ur means night. Nevertheless, again, the Gemara still wants to continue because we want to see whether that's the case always, or we want to see whether there are exceptions. We want to, again, these may have come up in different Batei Medrash. So the Gemara says Mesvi. We have another contradiction on Rav Huna, who says that it means daytime. A Braisa says about now we know like this, a korban shlomim you're allowed to eat for 2 days and the night between them, meaning let's say you brought the shlomim on a Tuesday, you can eat it the rest of that day Tuesday, Tuesday night, all of Wednesday day until Shkia, then that's it. Then the time for eating it is over and it becomes noiser. So the Braisa says, Yochol Yehi Nechol Orla Shlishi, you would think that maybe you're allowed to eat the Shlomim on the night going into the third day, meaning in our example that you should be able to eat it Wednesday night. The Dinhu, you could argue logically, you could argue by a binyan av, Zvachim Necholim L'Yemechad, Zvachim, meaning a korban toda, can be eaten for one day. If you bring a korban toda, it's only Tuesday day and Tuesday night. Ushlamim ne'echolam l'shnei yamim. Meanwhile, Ushlamim was saying you can eat for 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. So, ma lahalam laila achayu. And just like when it comes to the korban toda, we're saying that you have a night following the day. You can eat it not only Tuesday day, but also Tuesday night. Af kan laila achayim. The same thing. You should argue with a shlomim. We should make a mamotzinu. We should make a binyan av from a toda to a shlomim, and say just like by a toda, you have not only the day you bring the korban, but the following night. So it should be also with the shlomim. Therefore, you should be able to eat it in our scenario: Tuesday day, Tuesday night; Wednesday day, Wednesday night. No, Talmud Loimar, therefore, no, to avoid that. The Pasuk says, B'yom zivchachem ye'ochel. The Pasuk says, on the day that you bring your korban, it can be eaten. It's talking about a shlomim. Umi machros. And on the next day. And then the Pasuk continues, V'han noiser ad yom. What's left over until the day. So the word ad yom, until the day, it's an example of ad v'ad b'chlal. It means up to, inclusive. So it means, we learn from that, only while it's still day are you allowed to eat it. So you can't eat it the night going into the third day from when you brought the carbon. Then the Braisa continues, Yochol Yisorif Miyad. Now, in that case, then you would think that you should burn the noiser of the shlomim right away. So you brought the korban Tuesday. You have leftovers from it Wednesday Shkia. You would think right there, Wednesday Shkia, you should be burning it. Which we're going to say is not the case. Kodshim can only be burnt during the day. The same rule as you have, the same way as you have rules when you're allowed to eat kodshim, you have rules when you're allowed to burn kodshim. And the rule is that kodshim can only be burnt during the day. So yocho yisarif miyad, vidinhu, and again, you could argue, you could make a mamatzinu from a toida, zvachim ne'echolon l'yom v'layla echad. Again, a zvachim, meaning a toida, can be eaten for one day and the following night, ushlamim ne'echolon l'shnei yom v'layla echad. A shlamim, we just said, is eaten for 2 days and the one night in between. We said until shkia of the second day. So, ma lahalon tekef la'achil ha'sreifa. Now, when it comes to a toda, right after you finish eating it, you burn it. Afkan take a flachil asreifa. The same thing over here. As soon as the time ends for burning it, should for eating it, should begin the time of burning it, which would be, in other words, shkia of the second day, shkia following the second day. No, Talmud Loimar v'han noisim ibsara zavach b'yem ashlishi b'oish yisorif. No, the pasuk says what's left over of the meat of the korban on the third day should be burnt in fire. So in other words, if you read the pasuk according to the Trup, you would say, well, actually, no, the Trup also, the esnachta is actually on the word hazavach. So the word bayom hashlishi is actually tied by the Trup also to the words bo'eshi sarif. So it doesn't just mean v'an noisim b'sara zavach bayom hashlishi, whatever's left on the third day, means whatever's left bayom hashlishi bo'eshi sarif on the third day, it has to be burnt in fire. So in other words, in our scenario, you brought the korban Tuesday, you ate it Tuesday and Tuesday night and Wednesday. It became noiser Wednesday at Shkia. You can only burn it Thursday morning, which is the third day from when you brought the korban. By yom atasodif, v'atasofa balayla. So you can only burn the korban pesa. You can only burn the noiser of the korban by day, not by night. By the way, you have later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about the Korban Pesach. You have a similar kind of thing. The Korban Pesach, actually, now you also have a rule with the Korban Pesach that says that there's another rule that you can't burn leftover kodshim on Yom Tov. So therefore, you have the Korban Pesach. You eat it the whole night. Actually, you have a machlokas tanoim, whether you can only eat until Chatzos or until Alois HaShachar, whatever. But either way, you can't burn it the next morning because that's Yom Tov morning and you can't burn Kodshim. You have to leave it until the next day, the first day Chol HaMoed. No, it's Yisrael, of course, they only have the one day Yom Tov. So in fact, the Pnei Yehoshua talks about over here that really, in other words, the idea is you would always have that you would, with the exception of the shlomim, the rule would always be when the time for eating the korban is over, then the time for burning it immediately begins. Except by the korban Pesach, again, because it's Yom Tov, then therefore that overrides that. Then therefore, in other words, when we say that you have to burn it the next day, it's as if it's, so to speak, as if the next day was the day after you brought the, was the day after you brought the korban. You bring the korban Erev Pesach, it's as if we skip the first day of Pesach and say you burn it the morning of the first day Chol HaMoed. So that's the thing. Shlomim is the exception. That's the thing. We're saying by Yom HaShlishi, Bo Ishi Sarif, only that one we burn on the third day from when it was brought. Meaning two, as opposed to, there's no other korban where we do that. No, you burn it someplace else. Yeah. We're going to learn later on, and then we're going to learn later on in the Masechta the rules about what you do, where you burn when you can have cases of noiso, you can have cases where the korban Pesach became tamei and you have to burn it. You have different rules about where it's burnt and who supplies the wood and whatever. We'll see about that there. Yeah. But this is all talking about, by the way, where the korban itself was kosher in the first place, where the korban became posel during the bringing of it. For example, they had the wrong machshava, or the kohen did it with a chatzitza or whatever. Then it's not considered kodshim, not a posel. Then you don't have any special rules there about burning it. Yeah, from when you sprinkle the blood is when these rules kick in. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, midka amo yehe nechol ur l'shlishi, since the braisa is using as starting with the assumption that you should be able to eat the korban shlomim ur l'shlishi, and obviously it can't mean aloisa shachar of the third day. So therefore, shmamin alma ur urtahu. There is another proof that the word ur means nighttime. That's the thing. Ur l'shlishi means the night going into the third day. So applying that to our Mishnah, what it says, Ur la'arba'asar, would mean the night going into the 14th of Nisan. Not like Rav Huna is saying, Nagi, that it would mean Alois HaShachar of the 14th of Nisan. Because obviously over here, you can't be asking, should you still be able to eat the korban shlomim Alois HaShachar of the second day, you're still allowed to eat it because you have the whole second day. And the third day, obviously, there's no reason to think that you should be able to eat it that late. Then you don't even have the night to eat it. So Shemamina, good. That's another proof that the word Ur means night. Still, the Gemara continues. Tashma, Ur Shal Yom HaKippur. It's interesting that all the other ones the Gemara introduced with Meisvi, like I'm going to ask a contradiction on Rav Huna or on Rav Yehuda, and here it's saying Tashma. I don't know why. Anyway, Tashma, Ur Shal Yom HaKippurim, the night going into Yom, well, the Ur, meaning the Bepashtus, the night going into Yom Kippur, Mispal Sheva, you say a bracha of seven, you say Shemana Esrei of seven brachas, Mairuv of Yom Kippur, we say a Shemana Esrei of seven brachas, the first three, the last three, and the middle bracha about Yom Kippur, Melech HaKol Haaretz, Mekadosh Yisroel v'Yom HaKippurim, Umisvada, and you say vidui at the end of it, or Shamnu and Ochet, Shachris Mispal Shevo Moida, the same thing in Shachris, you daven a seven bracha, Shemana Esrei and Vidui, but Musaf Mispal Shevo Misvada, same thing Musaf and Yom Kippur, but Mincha Mispal Shevo Misvada, the same thing in Mincha, but Arvis, then when it comes Maidiv, Motzi Yom Kippur, Mispal Me'ein Shmoina Oser. You don't have to daven a full Shemana Esrei of 18 or 19 brachas because the Chachamim didn't want to be Matriach you, it's after the fast that you should have to daven such a long Shemana Esrei. So therefore, you just daven Me'ein Shmoina Oser, you daven with the middle bracha of Havinenu that we learned about in brachas. You have a one paragraph, Havinenu Hashem Elokeinu L'das Terachecha, where you have a few words or a line representing each of the theme of each of the middle 13 brachas of Shemana Esrei. So you say the first three brachas until Akel HaKadosh, then you say this paragraph Havinenu, then you continue with Ritzei and Modim and Sim Shalom, and that's it. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel Oymer Meshuma Voisav, but Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says in the name of his ancestors, no, Mispala Shmona also Shlemus. No, you daven full 18 brachas, or 19 nowadays, which of course is the halacha, because you have to say Atachonan Tonu in the bracha Atachonan. There's no room in Havinenu for sticking in Atachonan. First of all, the Gemara mentions in brachas that if you put in a line there for Atachonan Tonu, it would be confusing. Like this, Havinenu is not a nusach that everybody is used to saying anyway. Is regularly, especially now, if we're saying you only say it Motzi Yom Kippur. So therefore, so if you add in an extra line, then it would be confusing. And on top of that, also you have each line in there represents one of the brachas of Shemana Esrei. If you put in a separate line to represent Atachon Antonu, then it's like you're adding an extra bracha. Because the whole point is you have only one line or a few words in that tefillah to represent each of the brachas. And Atachon and Tonu is not supposed to be a separate bracha after all. It's supposed to be included in the bracha Atachonin. Right, but the point that the Gemara mentions over there different opinions when you're allowed to say Havinenu and when not. But the point is, if you start adding different things to the Nusach at different times, it's going to be confusing. Right. Because you're going to be making Abdallah ala kois, it's true, but you still have, we learned in Brachos, there's still a takana of the Chachamim that you should be saying Atachon Antonu. Fine, if you left out Atachon Antonu, you don't have to repeat Shemana Esrei because you will be saying ala kois, but nevertheless, there is a takana Chachamim to say Atachon Antonu and davening. The Gemara mentions over there the history that there was a period when the Jewish people were very poor and they couldn't afford wine for Havdalah. So therefore, the Chachamim of that time, the Anshe Knesset Gedolah or whoever, made the Takana to say Atachon Antonu. Later on, they were richer and they could afford wine. So they stopped saying Atachon Antonu and just said Alakos. Later on, they were poor again. So then the Chachamim didn't want to go. It's going to go back and forth depending on how the economy is doing. So they just made a standard thing. You got to say Atachon Antonu and you got to make Havdalah Alakos. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Alma or Urtahu. There is another proof that the word Ur means the night, because obviously Ur Shul Yom Kippur. When are you davening Ma'ariv of Yom Kippur? By the night, not Alois HaShachar. Yeah. So again, Shema Mina, that proves it. Okay. Toshma, here is the last proof. The Tani Dvei Shmuel. This one relates directly to our Mishnah. In the yeshiva of Shmuel, they taught a braisa, not like the Loshen in our Mishnah, Ur La'arbaaser, but Lele Arbaaser. The night going into the 14th, you do B'dikas Chametz by the light of a candle. Alma Ur Tahu. So there you clearly see. Now the Braisa is coming to explain our Mishnah. So it's not coming to argue with our Mishnah. So therefore, if our Mishnah says Ur Lar Baaser, it has to mean the night. Right in the Braisa. Lele Ar Baaser. In the Braisa, yeah. So Alma Ur Tahu. So you see that in our Mishnah, the word Ur necessarily has to mean the night. All the other proofs we had until now, okay, you could say maybe sometimes the word Ur means night. But here you have a Braisa, which is clearly coming to explain the Mishnah. And instead of using the word Ur, it clearly uses the word Lele. There's no question about it then. Obviously, we have to say that the word Ur in our Mishnah means night. So they could have brought the Braisa at the beginning, but Yagdol Torah V'Yadu, the Gemara wanted to go through the whole discussion. That's the style of the Gemara, to go through the whole discussion in order, and by the way, as we were going through it, we learned a lot of important things. Minister Shas over here. Yeah. So Ella. So no, the Gemara says now doesn't Rav Huna know that? So Ella bein Rav Huna or bein Rav Yehuda. So the answer is like this: both Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda dekulei alma ur tahu. Both of them agree that in our Mishnah the word ur means the nighttime. So why was Rav Huna saying nagi, which means when there's light, which sounds like it means alois hashachar? No, v'loy pligi. There's actually no machloikas after all between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. Marki asrei or marki asrei. Each one is using the style of speech that they used in his place. Ba'asrei did Rav Huna koru nagi. In Rav Huna's area, they called the night nagi, which is, they call it, it means light, but it's, in other words, they use Loshen Saginahar. They use a nicer way of saying, instead of saying darkness and night, they use the word Nagi, which literally means light. Over Asri, did Rav Yehuda, called her Leili. In Rav Yehuda's place in Pumadissa, they called it Leili, which means the night. So when Rav Huna had said Nagi, we were assuming all this time that he meant the daytime, meaning Alois HaShachar. Now we understand that, no, he actually meant nighttime. He just used the word Nagi because that was the word that they used in his area for nighttime. So there was really no machloikas in the first place.
Question.
One second, yeah. Okay, because that was the style they did. Yeah, what's the question?
So far, all the discussion was centered on trying to prove that Ur meant evening. What we've never discussed is why the Mishnah has to use Ur instead of using Lila.
That's what we're going to discuss now. Why did the Mishnah use the word Ur if, after all, it means the evening? So that's the question. The Tana Didan my time like Otoni Leili. So in the Braisa of Dvei Shmuel, they clearly said the word Leili. Why didn't our Mishnah do the same thing? Why did it begin with the word Ur? The answer is Lishna Mal Yehuda Naka. The Mishnah wanted to use also a nicer way of saying it, rather, especially, well, so actually the Bala Mora says it's particularly important when we're starting off. It's one thing Tana Dvei Shmuel, in the middle of it, this is not necessarily the first Braisa they taught. So therefore, so it's not the beginning of a subject. So therefore, they could use the word Leili. But our Masechta, we're beginning with the word beginning. We want to start off nicely with the word Ur. Although the Ravid actually disagrees with the Bala Mora on that, and says it's not a matter of the beginning versus the middle. He says that actually the Tana used the word Ur because he did want to hint at, even though we are talking at night, that still should be done when there's a little bit of light left in the sky, which means you have some Achronim say that that means that you should be doing it between Shkia and Seis, and you have some people have the minhag to do that. Others say, including the Alter Rebbe, that it means you should do it as soon as possible after Seis, but this is why we're going to talk tomorrow, Beis Hashem, about the idea that, for example, you don't sit down to learn between or do other things before the time of Bdikas Chametz, because then you may get distracted and you may forget about Bdikas Chametz. But that's all the Ravid says. It's also based on the idea that the Mishnah is using the word over here, or you want to make sure to do it as early as possible in the evening. And in fact, some of the other urs that we were mentioning over here that mean evening can also be as soon in the evening as possible. For example, the case at the top of the Amud, the woman who miscarried, it also means not just where it happened in the middle of the night, it could also be it happened right after Shkia, but it's the same thing because once Shkia comes, you can't bring Karbonis anymore. What? The Lashon? When to light candles, we say, no, it doesn't use the word or over there. No, the expression is that you light over there. What's the Lashon? From when the sun sets until people leave the marketplace. Yeah. Okay. So Lishna Mal Yehuda Naka, the Tana wanted to use a nicer Lashon. V'chidir Rabbi Shur ben Levi. Like Rabbi Shur ben Levi says, the Omer Rabbi Shur ben Levi, la'olam al yotzi adam dava maguna mipiv, a person should never allow a not nice expression to leave his mouth. Shari ikim akos of shmoina osius, as we see that the Torah went and used 8 extra letters and then went like, ikim literally means crooked, like the Torah said, an indirect expression using 8 extra letters, v'lo yotzi dava maguna mipiv, rather than saying something indelicate. Shenema, you have the story in the story of the Mabel that mina behema ha tahor, that Noach took in from the animals that were tahor, or mina behema asher enena tahor, which is not tahor. Now it could have said mina behema tmeya, and that would save 8 letters. So instead, so we see that the Torah used an extra expression with 8 letters longer in order to show this idea that you should use Lashon Nekiya. Now, of course, the Gemara is going to point out later, Rashi mentions it over here, we have many places in the Torah where it says the word Tomei, but the Torah wanted in at least one place to do this differently in order to show us this concept of Lashon Nekiya. By the way, the Bala Mora also makes a distinction. Yeah, there's an 8-letter difference between Asher Enena Tahora, which is 13, it's still 8 letters. Every letter in Torah is significant. But the Bala Mora actually discusses over here. He says, look, I mean, the word Lila is not really an indelicate expression. It's not a Dava Maguna. It's just not a more refined way of saying it. So he says, the Gemara, he explains that the Gemara is making a 3-level distinction over here. There's Lashon Nekiya. There's a Lashon which is not Maguna, but not so Nekiya either. So in our Mishnah, the Mishnah preferred to use, the Tana preferred to use the word Ur rather than Lila. And then you have an actual Dava Maguna, like using the word Tomei. Now, what's wrong with the word Tomei? Again, when the Rebbe talks about it in a number of sichas, and you have parts of this you can find in many earlier Mephoshim, that it's one thing when you're teaching Torah. Then you have to teach as clearly as possible. So then you got to say outright Tomei. There's no question about it. The question is in the stories of the Torah. But even in the stories of the Torah, as the Gemara is going to point out on Amud Beis, most of the time it does say Tomei. You only have this one case or a couple of other cases the Gemara is going to mention now where it uses this expression. Rabbeinu Yonah explains that the reason is, remember, this is before Matan Torah. There's really no animal that's Tomei to eat anyway. All it is you have certain animals that can be brought for Korbanos and certain that can. So therefore, it's not right to use the expression Tomei when it's like, you're not even talking about whether it's Tomei for eating or not, only whether it can be used for a Korban or not. So therefore, better the Torah is using the nicer Lashon and saying Asher Inana Tahora. But had it been that we're talking about which animals can be eaten or not, then yes, it would have said Tomei in order to be clear, yeah. Okay. Rapapa Amatesha, Rapapa says, we have an example In the Torah, where it uses 9 extra letters rather than using an indelicate expression. The pasuk says, if there's a person among you, if there's a man among you who will not be tahor because he had an emission of zera, of shechva zera at night. So we see, and again, where it says lo yiyah tahor instead of saying tamei. So actually, Rashi, now, actually, the words lo yiyah tahor is asher lo yiyah tahor is actually 13 letters. Tomei is 3 letters. So you actually have a difference of 10 letters. But even if the word tahor had been spelt without the vav, which it could be, then you would still have 9 extra letters. And in fact, Ravina Oma Esa vav the tahor. Ravina says, in fact, you have 10 extra letters because the fact is it is written tahor with a vav. Rav Acha by Yaakov Amasheshes. Rav Acha by Yaakov says, I can find you an example in Tanakh, not in Chumash, but elsewhere in Nach, where you have 16 extra letters rather than use an indelicate expression. Shenema ki ama mikrahu. You have the story in the story of Mocha Chodesh over there, where David hasn't shown up to Shol's Rosh Chodesh Suda. So ki omar. So on the first day, it says Shol didn't say anything. Ki omar, because he said to himself, mikrahu. It's just it so happened. Bilti tahor hu ki loy tahor. He's not tahor because he's not tahor. Instead of just saying outright tomei. So there's 16 extra letters in the pasuk over there. There is a vote, by the way, they say, one of what is why the double expression, tahor hu ki loy tahor. So there's a couple of explanations. One of them is that he might be saying that A, he may not have even gone to the mikveh, and B, even if he did, it's still tvul yom, and he's still not allowed to eat kodshim. But there's also an interesting explanation that I saw that Shaul is saying to himself, you know why David is not tahor? Because ki loy tahor, because he's not a tahor kind of person. In other words, like this, you have the pasuk that we just quoted, the pasuk ki yabachoy shashol yatar mikre loyla. So the Gemara explains, Rashi brings it on the pasuk, that you have a person has hirhurim, a person has thoughts of whatever by night, and that causes him to have keri. So therefore, when you have a person who controls their thoughts and is tahor in their thoughts, they're more likely to stay tahor in their body. So therefore, Shaul is thinking to himself, David, on the other hand, is the other way around. He's a not tahor person. Therefore, it's more likely that he had hirhurim and he became tahor. Obviously, Shaul was obviously badly misjudging David, but we know that.
Yeah. Question.
Yeah, we know, of course, that David was a tremendous tzaddik, but Shaul misjudged David very badly. Yeah. What's the question? Hold on a second. I've remembered. What's the question?
Could the fact that the Torah doesn't say outright the word tamei point to the fact that it would be an intermediate state where it would neither be tahor nor tamei?
There's no such thing as neither tahor nor tamei. You have stages in tumah. You have, for example, tvul yom. But no, it's either something is either tamei or tahor. It's essentially a binary thing. But only I went. Shaul was a tzaddik. David was a tzaddik also. But Shaul was heard lashon hara from Doeg and from other people about David, and he very badly misjudged David. Yeah, well, it could happen. Yes, a tzaddik could misjudge people. All right, this isn't the place to talk about it. It could be. Let's go on. I'll tell you something about it later. I'll tell you something about it later that Das Sofrim says about it. But okay. Anyway. Okay. Tanya Dvei Rabbi Shmuel. Then we learn a braisa of the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel in this connection. La'olam yisapa odem b'loshen nekiya. A person should always use clean language when they talk, meaning not even when they're teaching Torah, like we were saying before, but even stam in a person's conversation. Share bezov kore merkov of isha kore moshav. We see now you have a zov. You have the din is if a zov sits on anything, then you have tumas midras, and the thing becomes tamei. Then you have there's a separate din if a zov, if you have something that a zov rides on. Now you have, for example, within a saddle itself, you have the part that he sits on, and then you have the other parts of the saddle. For example, the saddle horn in the front of it or whatever. So the din is the saddle itself has the din of moishav, that if a person touches it, he and his clothes become tamei. But in the case of a merkav, in the case of, for example, the saddle horn that a zov used, if another person touches it, he becomes tamei, not his clothing. Gzeres hakasev, that merkav has a different din. That merkav has a different din than moishav. Now, in the case, then that's in the case. Now that din applies that din applies equally to a man or to a zav or a zava. However, when it comes to a zava, it just mentions that she sits on by oyala kliya shehi yeshevas olav. Tosfos explains we only learn from a ribui in the pasuk that by a woman the concept of merkav applies as well, but it doesn't actually say it in the pasuk. Why not? Because merkav implies that, now how do you usually ride on a saddle? Your legs are spread apart, one on each side of the animal, and it's not derech eretz. It's not a nice language to talk about that in hogun. Now she says it's not decent to talk about rechiva, about riding on an animal, a piece of reglayim, and then separating the legs by a woman. It's not sneistic. By the way, there are some poskim achronim who bring this gemara as one possible source for why women shouldn't wear pants, because then you have pisik reglayim. On the other hand, many other posts can disagree with that, because you could have her, even if she's wearing pants, her legs could still be fairly close together. They don't necessarily outline her legs. There are other grounds. There are other grounds that the poskim achronim talk about for women not to wear pants. And there is a tiny minority of poskim who do allow it, actually. But anyway, the majority opinions is mainly based on considerations of lo yikli gever al isha, etc. Anyway, but okay. So we see, in other words, that the Torah, instead of mentioning the concept of merkav by a woman, instead it mentions it only, we learn it only from a ribui. The Oimer, and then Ketana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel says, you have another pasuk expresses the same idea, the Sivchar Loshen Arumim, you should choose the language of the Arumim, meaning the Chachamim. Arumim means the wise ones, like Anochash Oya Arum. The Oimer, and another pasuk, also in Eiv, the Das Sfasai Boru Milelu. The knowledge of my lips are spoken clearly, meaning that you boru melosh nokiyum avura. Rashi says clean and refined. Okay, so the Gemara says maiva oimer. Why do we need to bring three psukim to explain the same point? So because the chi tema hani milibidaraisa, with the first only, if you only had the first pasuk about the merkav and the moshav, you would say, fine, in things daraisa, so the Torah itself, which after all, the Torah is dictated word for word by the Eibishter, therefore it's makbid on its Lashon, not necessarily when the Chachamim are speaking in a Mishnah or a Braisa or whatever, they don't have to necessarily be so careful. Therefore, he mentions the second pasuk that you should choose the language of the Arumim, of the Chachamim. So we see the Chachamim are also makbid on proper speech. Arumim means chachamim, like v'hanochash oya arum. The nochash was very crafty and wise, and the word arumim means wise. Yeah, it does also, but the word arumim does also mean naked, but it also means wise. Yeah, v'omer v'chitema. Then you would argue hani milibidrabanon. Fine, that applies when the chachamim are speaking in a mishnah or a braisa or whatever. Aval b'mili de'almaloi. Who says that the same concept applies stam when you're having a conversation? Therefore, v'oimer, therefore you bring the third pasuk, v'das fosei boru milelu, the knowledge that I'm saying with my lips are spoken boru, or spoken in a refined way. So even any kind of speaking that you do has to be done in a refined way. Okay. So the Gemara asks, v'isha l'ksiba merkav. So you're telling me the Torah never mentions the concept of a woman riding on an animal, where again, riding with one leg on each side of the animal? Where it says that Rivka and her maid servants got up and rode on the camels to go home, to go to Eretz Yisrael. The answer is Hosam. It shouldn't be asusidigmalim urchahi. The answer is there because of the fear of the camels. They're very tall animals. So therefore, it's normal for a woman to ride astride with one leg on each side so she can hold on tightly to the camel. But when you're talking about when she's riding on a regular animal, then more likely she would, then the more tzniyistic way would be that she would sit side saddle. And therefore, that would be called yeshiva rather than rechiva. Rechiva implies astride, one leg on each side. Yeshiva would imply riding side saddle. But here, when they're riding on camels, there's no choice. And after all, the Torah has to tell us the fact. The fact is that that is how they rode on the camels. So therefore, then the Torah has to use the word. What about Vaksiv Vayikach Moshe es Ishtev es Bona Vayakiva Malachamur? The pasuk says Moshe took his wife and his children and had them ride on the donkey, again using the word rechiva. The answer is Hosam. In that case, Mishum Bonav Urchu, because his children over there, so therefore it's normal. So Rashi says, because, in other words, his children are boys, so they can ride astride. So therefore it mentions, so in other words, so one possibility is that it means that the children rode and Sepoda didn't. The other possibility is it means she has to hold on to them, she has to help them. And therefore, once it's mentioning Rechiva by them, then it means she maybe did that also in order to hold on to them. Okay. What about Vaxiv? You have a pasuk by Avigail when she's coming to meet David. You have the whole story over there where David had gone to Nabal. There was a rich guy in the area and asked him to give some food for him and his men, especially Yom Tov is coming. Nabal's making a huge party for his sheep shearing. So David is asking if you can help us out with a little food. Nabal says absolutely not, and is very chutzpahdik towards David. So David is very upset about it. He considers Nabal as a murdered b'malchus, and he's going to go with all his men and wipe out Nabal's family. So Avigail, Nabal's wife, who she was at Tzadekas, and in fact the Nevi'ah, she found out what's going on. She came to meet David, and she actually brings some food with her as a present for David, and she calms him down. She tells him, the Gemara tells us in Megillah, she pointed out to him that even though lahalacha, you're a king, because you're already anointed by Shmuel, you're not yet in practice the king, because Shaul is still alive, so therefore you can't consider Nabal a murder b'malchus. And she gives him a whole long speech over there, and David eventually agrees with her and doesn't. The upshot is Nabal himself died shortly afterwards, and David married Avigail. Anyway, the pasuk says she was riding on the donkey, and there again you're not talking a camel, you're not talking about those little kids involved. The answer is Hasam Mishumbi Asusa Delilya Urhu. The answer is there was the fear of it was at nighttime. So therefore it's normal to ride astride on the animal at night because you're afraid of falling off. And so Marsha says you have the Psukim over there where David says to himself when he gathers his men together, I'm not going to leave anybody alive in Nabal's house by the morning. So that seems to imply it was at night. V'iboyisema, or another answer, you could say not necessarily mishum b'yasusa d'leil yaleka. Maybe there's no fear of at night. Maybe, in fact, this took place during the day. And what David means is it's going to take time to get over there, and then we're going to get over there and then wipe him out, etc. And that there won't be anything left by the morning. But mishum b'yasusa d'David ikka, you could say she was afraid of David, because after all, she's going to meet David. She doesn't know what mood he's going to be in. Another answer, you could say there's no fear of David, because later on in the story you also have after Nabal dies, it says also she rode to meet David, and then there's no fear of David anymore after David told her he's not going to harm them. And it still uses the word recheves, but mishum b'yasusa dahar ikka, but you still have the fear of the mountain. The psukim mentioned over there that between where Nabal lived and where David lived, there was a mountain, and she had to go over that. And therefore, when you're going up and down a mountain, it's normal to ride astride. Well, the food is not necessarily, she's not carrying it in her hand necessarily. She has donkeys loaded up with it, and she's riding on one of the donkeys. But still, yeah, when you're going up and downhill, then yeah, you ride astride so you don't fall off. Okay. Shaul is not involved in that story at all. There were other people in that area who kept on massering on David, the people of Ziph, for example. We have in Tilim, Bavaya Ziph and Vayomer LaShaul. But no, in Nabal himself, it doesn't say that he ever told on David. He just was chutzpahdik towards David and said, you have all these people who are running away from their masters and are saying we need stuff. You know, why should I bother giving him any of my food or anything that I prepared for my workers? What? So that's David figured that David figured apparently that Nabal should know that. Okay. Fine. The Gemara asked, "Ubar Raisa Mila Ksiv Tomei." Okay, but after all, I mean, does it never say the word Tomei in the pasuk? It says Tomei in many places, and so the Rebbe explains in a sicha on this. Fine, it doesn't. The Gemara is not asking in the places where it's teaching halacha, because fine, there's no question. When you're teaching halacha, you got to teach as clearly as possible. The question is, in most of the stories of the Torah, also it uses the word Tomei. Only in the couple of places that we mentioned on Amud Aleph does it instead use a longer way around. So why? Ella, no. So the rule is like this. Kol hecha d'chi hadadi ninu. Whenever you have that the loshen noki and the loshen that's not so noki are equal in length, mishtoi b'loshen nakiya, then we're going to use loshen nakiya. But kol hecha d'nefishin mili, but where it would take more words to use loshen nakiya, then mishtoi b'loshen katsara. Then most of the time, the Torah uses loshen katsara, uses the shorter loshen. So in a couple of places, the Torah makes an exception in order to show the importance of Lashon Nekiyah. But generally speaking, the Torah uses the shorter Lashon because we have to learn a different thing. Kid Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Mishum Rav Meir. A person should always teach his Talmidim in the shortest possible way, because then that way the Talmud will absorb it better. So most of the time, therefore, the Torah wants to use the shorter Lashon. So that's Tosfos says. In other words, if the Torah had never made the exception, then you wouldn't know that. Then you wouldn't know that you should ever, that there's ever a point of using Lashon Nekiyah, even with the same length. So in a couple of places, the Torah makes an exception to the usual rule, uses a longer Lashon, even though that breaks the rule of Lashon Tzara, in order to show the importance of Lashon Nekiyah. And you do it near the beginning of the Chumash. Yeah, yeah. Actually, Marsha learns over here that what the Gemara is saying is that. That when they're the same, then actually you have an equal choice. You have an equal choice whether to use let's say you have, if you have, for example, the Lashon Meguna is short and the Lashon Nekiyah is longer, then you have an equal choice between them. So the Gemara is saying you should use Derech Tzara, but you also have the option, if you want, of using the Lashon Nekiyah. But where they're equal in length, then you should davka use the Lashon Nekiyah. Again, the Baal Amor says there's actually a three-step thing. There's Lashon Nekiyah, there's the opposite, which is Lashon Meguna, where you have an actual improper Lashon, and then you have something in between, like the word Lila versus Ur. In our Mishnah, there's nothing wrong with the word Lila per se, but it's not as refined as the word Ur. So the Gemara asks, "V'chol heicha d'chiyadoni ninu mishtoi b'loshen kavod?" Are you telling me that whenever the two lashonas are equal in length, then you should always use the more b'kavodik loshen? V'chol recheves v'yesheves t'chiyadoni ninu. What about the words recheves and yesheves? They're the same length. V'ka'amar recheves, and still the pasuk used the word recheves. It could have used the word yesheves, but. And instead it's using the word recheves. And we said before, recheves by a woman is not really a proper lashon. So why are we doing it? The answer is rachvas ksiv. The answer is, in those places, when it says recheves, it's written without the vav, so it's written resh chaf vez saf. So it's four letters. Now why can't yesheves also be written without the vav? Rashi and Tosfos both explain that whenever you have, in general, Rashi says in general, when you have something in the Torah that's written choser, it always comes for some kind of drasha. Tosfos says specifically when it comes to the word yoshav, we find in many places where when the Torah says yoshev without a vav, that we doush in it. For example, we have the yoshev v'shar sdoim, where it means that day they had appointed him as a judge, the Ephraim yoshev v'seich b'nei ches, that when Avraham needs to buy ma'aros machpelah from him, then they promoted him in order that he should be an important person. So whenever it says yoshev or yoshevus without a vav, it's always meant for some kind of drasha, as opposed to recheves, not necessarily. Marsha says also the vort could be that the difference, I mean, the vav is not noticeable, whether the vav is written or not is not noticeable in the pronunciation. And we're still saying that you still use the shorter lashon, because after all, it is shorter, even though it's not shorter in speech, only in writing. Okay. So the Gemara gives some examples now where we see the difference between using lashon Nekiyah and not. So the Gemara says, Hanu tre tamidi, there were two tamidim, to have a yasvi kame de Rav, that were sitting in front of Rav and learning. Chad Omer, one of them said, Shavisinon hai shmaita kidover acha mesankon. This discussion in Torah has made me as tired as a tired dover acha. The word mesankon means tired. It's actually in Rashi and Chumash today, mentions it. But by Vatomaleya Bog God, Rashi explains the word God means good mazel, and he refers to a Gemara in Shabbos, Gad Gdiu Snook Loy, where a person says, be mazel, dick my mazel, and don't be tired. So we see that the word snook means tired. Rabbi Nachmanano here has a couple of other explanations of what snook could be. Whatever it is, he's comparing himself to a tired or flailing or whatever, Dover Acher. Vachad Amon. Davacha means, no, the word davacha means a pig. Mesankon means tired. Shavisinan hai shmaita could davacha mesankon. This discussion in Torah has made me as worn out as a tired davacha. V'chadama shavisinan hai shmaita could di mesankon. The other one said it made me as tired, as worn out, as a tired goat. Rav would not speak afterwards to the first one who used the word davar acher, because he used a lashon meguna. Actually, the Chassam Sofer has a vote on it, more pnimis inyanim, that he says that after all, you know, osid chazur li tahar. So the first Talmud is trying to hint at that idea that eventually the chazur will be overturned, but still, it's not a nice lotion to use. And when we're saying that Rav didn't speak with him, the Maharik actually brings in one of his tribus. Doesn't mean that Rav never spoke with him again. It means for the next 30 days he didn't speak with him. Like he considered him as low like he's in a mini cherem. Yeah. Another example, Hanu Tre Talmidi Dehabu Yasvi Kameh Dehilol. There were two Talmidim sitting and learning Torah in front of Hillel. V'chad minayu Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. One of them was Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. We don't know who the other one was. V'amrila Kameh DeRebbe. Another version is that the story happened with two Talmidim in front of Rebbe. V'chad minayu Rabbi Yechonon. And then one of them was Rabbi Yechonon. And again, we don't know who the other one is. Chad Omer, one of them said, "Mipnei ma boitzrin b'tahara ve'ein moskin b'tahara." Why is it that when you're harvesting grapes, you have to make sure to use kalim that are tahar? But when boitzrin means harvesting grapes, but when you're moskin, meaning when you're harvesting olives in Lashon Kodesh, you have different words for the different kinds of harvests. When you're moskin, when you're harvesting olives, you don't need to make sure that the kalim are tahar. Now, the actual reason for it, we learned in Masechet Shabbos. Now, the Gemara had actually mentioned a few different reasons why. It boils down to that the juice that comes out of the grapes is going to be machshir them. And you have various scenarios over there where you want that juice. You have, well, it's machshir the kabbal tumah, right? But it's only machshir if it's l'rotzon. But the Gemara explains over there are a couple of scenarios where it is l'rotzon. You could have, for example, where you're using baskets that are lined with tar so that none of the juice drips out. So then you're showing you want the juice. You have an example the Gemara gives over there that you want to check whether the grapes are ripe, and you take one grape and squeeze it to see whether enough juice is coming out of it and spritz it on the other grapes. And then when you harvest them, they're still wet. A couple of reasons the Gemara gives over there. Whatever the case, the bottom line is that it's one of the gzeiros of Yud Ches Dover, as Gemara mentions in the first parak of Shabbos, that you have to do the grape harvest using tahor kalim, and you yourself have to be tahor, as opposed to the olive harvest, you don't need to do that. The juice that comes out of them is not actual oil. Only when you press them does the actual oil come out. What comes out before that is moihel, and it's not machshir the kabbal tumah. When you first, the olives, if you have the sometimes you have juice on the outside of the olives, it's not real, it's not actual oil, it's just juice in there, yeah. Anyway, so one Talmud phrased it like that. The other one asked, why is it that the betzira, the grape harvest, has to be done betara, but the mesika, the olive harvest, can be done betuma? So one of them used the word tahara for both of them, the other one used tahara and then tuma. Omar, so Hillel or Rebbe, said, "Muftachani bezeh shemoira hirab Yisrael." I am certain about this one that he will end up teaching, that he will end up teaching and passing halacha for the Jewish people. And in fact, the lahayu yomim watamacha hora hirab Yisrael. Sure enough, not very long passed before he was teaching and passing halacha for the Jewish people. Which one? But Pashtus, we mean the one who mentioned the word tahara for both of them. There is actually an explanation. We've shown him bring an explanation from a different version of Tosfos that we don't have in front of us over here that actually says the one who mentioned betuma is in a way the better one because he's using Lashon Ktzara. We just said before, you're supposed to use Lashon Ktzara, whereas Ve'ein Moiskin Betara is a longer Lashon. On the other hand, they say that no, maybe not, because after all, for one thing, that maybe that applies only the one of the Rishonim, the Tashbitz, brings an explanation, which actually, he says that the Rebbetzin, the wife of Rabbi Yosef, gave this answer. So a Rebbetzin that lived in his times gave an answer. When do we say you have to do Derech Ktzara? When you're talking to your Talmidim. Here is the Talmidim asking a question of the Rebbe. There's no reason for you to use Lashon Ktzara over there. Adarabba, make your question as clear as possible. Use Lashon Arucha in order to make sure that your question is very clearly understood. And like this, when he uses the expression Moiskin Betuma, could be misunderstood that you dafka have to do it Betuma, which is wrong. You're allowed to do it Betara if you want, you just don't have to. So the majority of Rishonim understand that Hillel or Rebbe was happy and praised the one who used the word Tara for both of them because he's not using Lashon Ktzara, but fine, that doesn't matter when you're asking a question. He's using a more refined Lashon because he's using Tara for both, and he's making it clear by not saying Moiskin Betuma, which could be misunderstood. Okay. Another example, Hanu Tlosa Kahani, there were three Kohanim who received portions of Lechem upon him. Chad Omalahu Higiani Kapoil, one of them says, saying to the other Kohanim, I got a piece of the Lechem upon him the size of a bean.
V'chad omer higiani kizayis. Another one says, I got a piece of kizayis. V'chad omer higiani kiznav halata. The third one says, I got a piece the size of a lizard's tail. Are you comparing the lachem upon him to a lizard's tail, which is Tommy? Bodku achrav, they checked into him, umotzuba shemetz psul, and they found a psul of kahuna in him, namely, Rashi says that he was a cholol. The problem with that is, why are they checking him? V'atanya, we learn in a b'raisa. It's actually a Mishnah, so actually it should be Vahatanan, whatever. Ein bodkin min ha-mizbeach ulamayla. You don't have to check into the yichus of a koyin beyond the mizbeach, meaning usually you have rules over there. The Mishnah mentions in Kedushin, in certain cases where you have to check into a person's yichus before they marry them. But once you trace a koyin back to a koyin who served on the mizbeach, you don't have to check back any further because the Sanhedrin would vet any koyanim before they went to serve in the mishmikdash, would check out their yichus and make sure that they don't have any, that they're not halalim or whatever. So once this guy had served in the mishmikdash, and obviously if he had, if he's receiving a portion of the lachav upon him, then you shouldn't be checking after him anymore. The answer is loy tema shemetz psul el shachatz psul. So don't say that there was shemetz, which literally means a semblance of a psul, but rather shachatz psul. Shachatz means gaiva. He himself was a gaivadik person, and he's speaking so disrespectfully about the kodshim. Such a person does not deserve to serve in the mismikdash. Only a Rashi brings from a Gemara in Menachos that only a kohen who believes in the whole avoda, in all the dinim of the kohenim and all the dinim of the avoda, can serve in the mishmikdash. And this guy didn't, if he's talking in such a disrespectful way. So therefore, they decided that he's possible to serve. So that has nothing to do with his yichus. We thought that it had to do with his yichus. Now we're saying it's this. V'iboy seima, shiny hosam. Another explanation is you could say it means, after all, that there was a psul yichus, that he was in fact a cholol. Usually you don't check once he served on the mizbeach. Shiny hosam, but it's different in that case. The iud da'ara nafshe, he messed things up for himself by speaking in such a way. It shows, therefore, that obviously the first time they checked, they didn't do a thorough job. They must have missed out something, and now they checked again and found it. Tosfos brings over here an explanation from Rabbeinu Hananel that the word shemetz psul actually means a psul of avodah zarah, that they found that he had previously served avodah zarah, and a kohen who served avodah zarah is possible to ever serve again in the mishmikdash. Okay, another example where we find out what a person is based on something that he says. Hahu arama, there was a certain goy, to have a solik v'ochop sochem Yerushalayim. He would go up every year to Yerushalayim and eat from the korban Pesach. Omar, and he would boast about it. Ksiv kol ben necher lo yechabo. The pasuk says no ben necher, meaning a goy or Yisrael mumer, is allowed to eat from the korban Pesach, and kol ora lo yechabo, and no ora lo allowed to eat. I'm eating the best parts of the Korban Pesach, so I'm putting one over them. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says to this guy, "Mi kasofa loch me alya? Have they ever given you the alya to eat? The alya is the fat tail of the sheep; it's the best part. So they're only giving you think you're getting away with it. They're only giving you the cheap parts." So obviously he's trying to trick him. So the Maharshal explains, in other words, that he's telling him, you think that you fooled them? You didn't fool them. They know you're a goy. That we're saying, that you can't give the Korban Pesach to a goy, is only the alya. So like this, they're giving you other portions because they know you're a goy. They're just not giving you from the alya that they're keeping for themselves. So the goy says, yeah, I never received the alya. So he tells him, ki salkas lahasam. So fine, the next time that you're oil of the regal, tell them that they should give me from the alya. Now why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira deal with him himself? Rashi just says, he didn't have the ability to kill him himself. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira lived in Netzivin, which is in northern Babel. He didn't have the ability, he didn't have the power to be able to get the guy executed. Later on, we're going to say that in Yerushalayim, they dealt with him. So that's a different question. Tosfos asks the question. First of all, Tosfos says, the fact is the Korban Pesach could also be a goat. And a goat doesn't have an alya that's brought on the Mizbeach. The thing is that most people would use a sheep for their Korban Pesach. Also, it could be that maybe this guy explicitly told Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira that every time I make sure the group that I'm in brings a sheep. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira knew he could get him this way. Now comes the question. Yeah, Tosfos asks, why is Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira not going on Aliyah L'Regel and bringing a Korban Pesach himself? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. He might not have had karka. We know that a person who doesn't own karka is potter from Aliyah L'Regel. Tosfos apparently is learning that a person who is potter from Aliyah L'Regel is also potter from bringing the Korban Pesach, which is, there's a good deal of discussion among Achronim, where is Tosfos getting that comparison from? But that's what Tosfos is saying. There is an interesting vote on that that's brought from the Vilna Gaon. Why does Rabbi Yehuda not have karka in Eretz Yisrael? Every year has a certain amount of karka. No, not because of the Levi. There's an interesting point. The Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses the Atzama Sayyavashis, the dry bones that Yechezkel revived. You have one opinion that says over there that they were the Bnei Ephraim who left Mitzrayim 30 years early and they were killed by the Plishtim. And the Gemara is discussing over there the question, did it happen in real life or was it only a Nevuah? And the Gemara says, and also what happened to these people? What happened to these people afterwards? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira got up and said, I'm a descendant of theirs and I have tefillin that I inherited from them. So in other words, they were real people and this really happened. So if we say then, if we put those things together, that they were the Bnei Ephraim and Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira as their descendant, it comes out he has no chelik in Eretz Yisrael because they died 30 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim and then 70 years before they came into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, he has no portion. The portions they gave out only when they came into Eretz Yisrael. And fine, the Yotzi Mitzrayim, the people who left Mitzrayim by Tzias Mitzrayim, get portions in Eretz Yisrael, not these Bnei Ephraim who left 30 years early. So there's a vote from the Vilna. The Rebbe brings it in a sicha. He says, okay, it's a cute vote, but come on. You know, you're saying that Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira had tefillin that he inherited from these ancestors of his. If there were these Bnei Ephraim who left 30 years before Matan Torah, how do they have tefillin? So therefore, you have to say that. Therefore, you can't say that. But anyway, so yeah, 7:45 is class three. So anyway, so that's one answer. Tosfos says also he might have been old. And again, an old person who can't walk on foot is potter from Aliyah L'Regel. And again, Tosfos is learning he's also potter from Korban Pesach. Also, Tosfos says he was living in Chutz La'aretz, and people in Chutz La'aretz are potter from Aliyah L'Regel and from bringing a Korban Pesach. And they could if they want to, but they're not obligated to come to Eretz Yisrael. There was a lot of discussion among the Achronim about this little Tosfos over here, about all the details of what Tosfos is saying over here, where they get this idea that a person outside Eretz Yisrael is potter from Korban Pesach. But you know, that's what Tosfos is saying. Anyway, so the point is Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira himself wasn't going to be going to Eretz Yisrael. So he says, when you go there, ask them for the Aliyah. Sure enough, Kisolik, when this guy went there, Omalahuma Aliyah Safuli. So he says to them, give me some of the Aliyah. Omrele, they said, what do you mean? Aliyah Gavoya Salko. What do you mean? Aliyah is brought on the Mizbeach as part of the Korban. We don't eat it. Omrele, so they asked him, Man Omalachochi, who told you, who gave you such an idea to ask for the Aliyah? Omrele, who would have heard of Ben Maseira? He said, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira told me. Ah, something's fishy over here. Omru, they said, my hide, come on. What's this in front of us? Something's fishy over here. Bud Kubasre, they checked into the situation. Vashkechu Darmohu, they found that he was a goy. Vekatluhu, and they killed him. Now, on what grounds did they kill him? There's a lot of discussion among the Achronim. What grounds did they have for killing him? So Balabatish, you could say, okay, you know, they figured, what's he coming there for? He's probably a spy or something. He's dangerous to them or whatever. But there is a good deal of discussion among the Achronim. Lahalocha, what was the grounds? What grounds Lahalocha would there have been to kill him? The Menchas Chinuch discusses it. Other Achronim discuss it. One possibility is maybe this that we're saying that there's an isser for a goy to eat a Korban Pesach. Maybe the isser is actually on the goy himself. Maybe it's not just an isser on the Jews to give a goy from the Korban Pesach. Maybe the goy himself has a mitzvah not to eat from the Korban Pesach. And then, like any other of the Sheva Mitzvah Nenayach, he's liable, he's chayav misa for that. Another possibility is maybe it was a matter of gezel. He's stealing from Hekdesh, or he's stealing from the other Jews. He's taking a piece of the Korban that he's not entitled to. And maybe he chipped in, but they wouldn't have given it to him if they wouldn't have sold it. They wouldn't have had him chip in if they knew that he was a goy. So it's like a mekachtos. Another possibility is maybe he went into the Azara when they were bringing the korban, and a goy who goes into the Azara is chayv misa. They actually had signs around the sardig warning. They actually found one of those signs in an archaeological dig where they warned the goyim. Any goy who goes past this point is chayv misa. Yeah. There's a lot of possibilities. Yeah. Okay. So, Sholchu Leila Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. Then the Chachamim in Yerushalayim sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. Shalom Loch Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. Peace to you, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. To At ben Nitzivin. You live in Nitzivin, hundreds of miles away. Umetzodascha Prusa Yerushalayim. But your net is spread all the way to Yerushalayim that you were able to catch this guy. The Rebbe brings, by the way, in Achron Shel Pesach, Tavshin Lamed, is the first time the Rebbe started talking about the whole issue of Miyu Yehudi, bringing it out into public and shturming about it and whatever. And the Rebbe brought this Gemara and this connection that you see over here. You have a Goy who's pretending to be a Yid, and they didn't say, okay, you're pretending to be a Yid, fine, you know, we'll let you be. Tosfos actually discusses, if a person comes to us and says he's a Yid, can you just believe him off the bat? Okay, over here you have most people who are there for the Korban Pesach are Jews, so maybe you have more reason to. But you don't say the guy wants to be a Yid, so let him be a Yid. No, he either is a Yid or he's not. And if he's not, then you deal with him. So the Rebbe brought that as the whole point of Miyu Yehudi, that you can't allow there to be a blurring of the lines between a Jew and a Goy. Another example of, so now going back to the example of Lashon Nekiyah, that you're supposed to use nice language, the Gemara tells Rav Kahana Cholosh, Rav Kahana was not feeling well, Shadru Rabbanan Rabbi Shua Breder of Idi, so the Chachamim sent Rabbi Shua Breder of Idi, Omrulei, they said, Zil Bedoik, my Dine, go check what his din is, in other words, how he's doing. Osa Ashkechid, Noch Nafshe, he came and found that Rav Kahana had passed away. So he ripped his clothing, like you do when a Talmid Chacham passes away. Then he turned the ripped side to the back so they don't realize it right away. Rashi says, because then they could get so shocked that the shock could be harmful to them, like you find by Yaakov, you know, for example. Marsha says also the vote is, if he had the rip in front, that would amount to telling them openly that he passed away. He didn't want to do that. And he was going, and he was walking and crying. Omrulei, so the other Chacham said to him, Noch Nafshe, did he pass away? Omrulei, so Rabbi Shua said to them, Ano loy kamina, I didn't want to say it. I gave a hint to it, but I didn't want to actually say it because Umoitzi Dibo Huksil, as the Pasuk says, the one who gives out the bad news is a fool. So I didn't want to openly say that Rav Kahana passed away, which is why I'm doing this, but you're the ones who said it, I didn't, basically. Another example of using Lashon Nekiyah, Yochanan Chakukah Nafik L'Kiryasa, Yochanan Chakukah went out to the villages to check on the harvest. Tosfos brings two explanations. One is that Chakukah means a sofer, like a Mechokik Mbein Raglov. The other explanation is he came from a city called Chukoika in the north of Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, so he one time went out to the villages to check on the crops, to check on the Torah. Ki also, when he came back, Omrulei, they asked him, Chitin Nasu Yofus, did the wheat turn out good? Omrulehem, he answers them, Sa'urim Nasu Yofus, the barley turned out good, because the wheat hadn't, like we just said, he didn't want to tell them the bad news outright. Omrulei, but they said to him, like dismissively, Tseu Basil L'Susim L'Chamodim, go tell that news to the horses and the donkeys. That's not news that we need. So the pasuk says, by Shlomo HaMelech, the barley and the hay were for the horses and for the drachash, which is the donkeys or some other mules or some other kind of fast animal like that. So don't tell us about the barley. That's not what we need to know. So what should he have said if he doesn't want to say outright that the wheat didn't turn out good, and they're telling him you shouldn't say the barley turned out good? What should he have said? The answer is he could have said Eshtakad Nasu Chitin Yofus. He could have said last year's wheat harvest was good, and we would understand it means and this year's was not. Inami Adoshim Nasu Yofus. Or he could have used the expression the lentil harvest was good. Lentils are Michael Adam, so therefore that would have been a more appropriate thing to say. There is a sicha in Tu B'Shvat Tavshin Nun where the Rebbe talked about this Gemara briefly. And explained actually in terms of avoida. We know there's the avoida involving wheat, which is Michael Adam, and barley, which involved the avoida of the Nefesh Elikis, and there's the avoida of the Nefesh Bahamas. We know, for example, during Sfira, we have to be refining the Nefesh Bahamas, which is why you start off with a korban of barley, and then you finish off on Shavuos with the korban of Shtei Alechem, which is wheat. So what happened was when they're asking him, how is the wheat harvest doing? They were asking him, how's the avoida of the Nefesh Elikis doing? So he answers about the barley. So when they tell him Tseu Basil Susim Lachamodim, the Rebbe says they're not telling him dismissively, like, well, what do we need that for? They're telling him, actually, that's good news. The Susim and the Chamodim, meaning the Nefesh Bahamas, should be aware that the Avodah is going well. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara is saying still he should have been focusing more on what's going on with the Nefesh Elikis rather than what's going on with the Birur of the Nefesh Bahamas. Umachokik means Ragav is actually in Bereshis. Umachokik means a lawgiver. It means a person who teaches Torah. That the Yaakov is giving Yehuda a bracha, that they'll never cease from Yehuda's descendants, somebody who's machokik, somebody who teaches Torah. There will always be teachers of Torah from among Yehuda's descendants. Ben Raglov literally means from between his feet. So either it means, I mean, Parshat Yad, so some people would sit cross-legged. So you have like, he's sitting and writing in front of him. But also Raglov also means, we learned at the end of Aaron, for example, that Raglov means having relations. So it means among his descendants. Among his descendants, like so among Raglov, among his descendants, there'll always be Mechoikik. There'll always be somebody who teaches Torah. But the word Mechoikik also means a sofer. In Devarim, in Vizos HaBracha, you have a different bracha for Yehuda, but no, I don't think it uses the word. Yeah. Oh, Kisham Chelkas Mechoikik Sofer, and that's what you're thinking of. By God's bracha, it says that there, the place of the Mechoikik, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu, is hidden because Moshe Rabbeinu was buried in the territory of Shevet God. That's what you're thinking of, yeah. Okay. Shkoyach.